big record from 1979. There's Nights on Broadway from Candy. Well, we'll finish that sentence in just a moment, because live on the line from Atlanta, Georgia, I've got the lady herself. Thank you very much for giving me the time.
Hi, how are you?
Absolutely wonderful, thank you. It's a pleasure, it's a delight to speak to you.
Nice to speak to you too.
Great, lovely. Now, first off, before we go any further, I'd like to settle point of contention in the UK especially on the pronunciation of your surname. UK people tend to think it's pronounced Staten, but I think it's truly Staten, isn't it?
It's Staten, yes.
Fantastic, lovely, lovely. And can I say how pleased we all are that you've beaten your battle with your recent illness?
Yes.
I mean, that must have been
amazing.
Such...
It is amazing. I came through it, and
absolutely,
it was not easy.
No, but, I bet. It must have been such a roller coaster. Yeah, well done. Fantastic.
Yeah.
And isn't it wonderful what they can do nowadays? I mean, if you think 20 years ago...
I mean, technology and where cancer treatments have come from. They used to be so scary, and people would just almost want to commit suicide knowing what they were facing.
Yeah.
But now it's gotten so much better, and they're improving it every year.
It's wonderful.
And they've got top, the equipment is number one. I mean, it's like the top of the line, and they've gotten it fixed now where chemotherapy, it's still chemotherapy, but it's not as bad as it. I was scared to death when they said cancer caused. I was like, no, I'm not doing chemotherapy.
Of course.
Forget it.
Of course.
I am not doing chemotherapy. You know, I'd rather just die with the cancer than have to die with the chemotherapy.
Yeah.
But anyway, it was really not that bad.
Good.
They had it fixed. I had good doctors, and I had oncologist, my chemotherapy oncologist. They have a solution. I went to Cancer Treatment Centers of America, and they have a whole just a whole team for you. They specialize in treating one person at a time.
Yeah, I mean it's
and
not,
they study you.
It's not routine, but it's certainly not reinventing the wheel each time. It's not uncharted territory anymore, is it?
No, it's not one size fits all. It's not that anymore.
No, absolutely.
And they did, according to my blood type, my everything, they had it fixed. I'm not saying it was easy.
Oh, no.
Because it wasn't. It was not easy. It was still, it still has its drawbacks, and the radiation was not easy. And you still have... after effects of radiation long after it's over.
Right.
And I'm still working with that right now, but I'm starting to get back. I got a show to do in Tennessee, so I'm starting, really, really slow in October. So,
excellent.
So I'm getting back, and I'm doing, I'm rehearsing myself, getting my voice back right.
Lovely.
Because it's been a year since I used it, so... it's like any other muscle. If you don't use it, you lose
absolutely,
it.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I have to do all my vocal eases and my exercises and my walking and, building myself back up. Mm-hmm. Other than that, Eddie, I'm doing fine.
Lovely. Very, very pleased to hear it. Now, of course, across in the UK, you really rose to prominence with a track called Young Hearts Run Free in 1976.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about the origins of that, because you met a gentleman, David Crawford, didn't you?
Yeah. He was my producer.
Mm-hmm.
And I had known David for many years, but I'd never worked with him. He always wanted to work with me. Even when he lived in Atlanta, I used to go over to his studio.
Okay.
And we would sit there at the piano, and he used to be a gospel. I knew him from gospel. He was a keyboard player for the Caravans. It was a gospel group called the Caravans. And I'd known David long, even when I was a kid. We were like, grew up together, in a sense. And he would go over there. He said, one of these days, I'm going to do a record on you. And I said, no, I'll be glad when that day comes, because I think we're going to throw down, David. He said, yes. And at that particular time, it so happened that I had signed with Warner Brothers. I just left Rick Hall in fame.
Yep.
And had signed with Warner Brothers, and this was their first project on me. And David had moved to L.A., and David was at Warner Brothers every day looking for an artist to record.
Right.
And then he brought songs to them, and he, you know, he's a songwriter as well. And he brought songs to them, and they were like, I don't know anyone that could do this type of music, and we'll keep you in mind, though. You know, we'll stay in touch, and if anyone comes along. So when I came along, they mentioned, well, we just signed Candy Staten. He said, you're joking. He said, I'd love to produce her. And they said, well, let's see, maybe that might work.
Yeah.
And so they put us together, and we began to go over some stuff, you know, that he had written, and it fit really good. And so they hired him to be producer, my first producer with Warner Brothers.
Brilliant.
First record I did with them on the Warner Brothers label was in 76.
And what an entry that was.
And the first song we did that was a big hit was Young Hearts Run Free.
And what an anthem that was. Still filling dance floors today. Let's have a listen.
And sharing this one and only life, ending up just another lost and lonely wife. You count up the years and they will be filled with tears. Love only breaks up to start over again. You'll get the babies but you won't have your man. While he's busy loving every woman that he can.
Today, say I'm gonna turn loose 1,000 times.
a great piece of music. But I mean, that wasn't just another song that he got in his repertoire, was it? Because it was very personal to you. You were going through rather a difficult relationship at the time, weren't you?
Yes, because like I told you, we knew each other a long time. Yeah. And so we were having lunch. We were trying to find the way a theme for the album. We were trying to find what songs would fit and what songs wouldn't fit, and the timing of the songs, and what, you know, where we were living and where I was in my personal life.
Yeah.
And so I was with this very abusive guy at the time, and I was trying to get away from him. And he was threatening my life.
Oh, dear.
And he was telling me if I ever got away from him that he would kill me or members of my family, and I was so scared of him. So
goodness,
I was like, David, how in the world am I going to ever get away from this man? I don't understand how I'm going to do it. And little did I know he was writing. I noticed he was writing. And I thought he was just trying to remember what I said, you know, just writing so he could help me. And never thought he was writing Young Hearts Run Free.
Wow.
And that's what he was writing. He was putting that whole concept together as we talked. And we had many lunches and dinners together. And each time we get into that subject, he'd write more. And so when it came time, not only did he write that song, but he wrote, like, Run to Me. He wrote Honest I Do, So Blue, and all those songs for the album. And and when it came time for us to actually record, I flew to L.A.,
yeah.
And we got the studio, and he got some of the finest singers and musicians there were in L.A.
Well, that's it. I mean, you were working with Denise Williams, weren't you, and Ray Parker Jr.?
Yes, she was on the album.
Yeah.
Yes, she was on the album. And it's just, you look on it, I forget everybody that was on that album. I have to look at the album. I have to look at the album cover to see who played music and all. But they're all famous now in their own right.
Yeah, rightly so.
And so that's what made that album such a big hit, you know, that song such a great hit.
The whole album's full of great tracks. One of my favourites is I Bet Your Sweet, Sweet Love. Let's play that next.
Kinda get in my way, but a sweeter thought never crossed my mind. Mm-hmm. If I had my way, I'd never leave your side. But a woman's got to work most of the time. But you can bed by nightfall, I'll be back in your arms. Be there. It's not a
track. But of course, you'd been singing for many, many years before. In fact, as a bit of a child prodigy, weren't you? Because you were five years old, weren't you? When a neighbor,
yeah, when I first hit the stage for the first time, I was 5 years old, shaking in my knees.
Oh, I bet.
And they put me on a chair, and the chair was shaking, and I'm trying to hang on. Because they couldn't see me, you know, when back in the olden days, when they had churches, traditional churches like Baptist churches, they would have a railing around the front part of, and then they'd have a pulpit in the middle.
Okay.
And I had to stand in front of the railing, and they couldn't see me. Only they could see my shoulders, and they came and put a chair there so I could stand up and be seen. And I had gone to church since I was in my mother's womb, so every song in church that they sung, I remembered it. And I sung a song called "The Lord Will Make a Way." At 5 years old, that's a lot to learn.
Beautiful, yeah.
But
it is,
I knew
absolutely.
It. I knew it. Yeah.
And it wasn't
so
wrong.
I stood up and sung that, and they got happy and went to shouting and throwing handkerchiefs and screaming, you know. I mean, if you've never seen movies where the old black churches get happy, then you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Lovely. Well, it wasn't long before
the living daylights out of me.
It wasn't long before you joined a gospel group, wasn't it? The Four Golden Echoes.
Well, when I got to be eight years old, we put our own, well, after that Sunday, well, you know, my sister and I started singing together, and we would sing duets and in church. And my pastor, who was Reverend King, he would always call us up to sing, which gave us, we didn't know we were practicing for audiences, but he gave us the boldness to sing in front of a crowd.
Wow.
And so every Sunday he'd bring his two little girls up, and then sometimes we would go out with him. He would be invited to other churches, and we would go out with him. He'd ask my mother, could we go and sing before he preached? And my mother would say, yeah, just don't keep him out too late, you know. And so he would say, oh, no, it's at 3 o'clock, so I'll have him back here long before night. And so we would sing, and we would make people shout, and they loved us, and they would just come to see sometime them two little girls. Them two little girls is going to be with Reverend King, and church would be full. And so that's how we learned how to sing, you know. And then the two other girls, her name, one was Letha May, and the other one's named Betty Jean.
Right.
And so they wanted to sing, too. And so we sat down at school and doing recess. We would all get together and harmonize. And then one of the girls, Betty Jean's aunt, was a keyboard player.
Okay.
And so we started going to her house after school and rehearsing with her. And before we knew it, we were getting dates. And so we started a group called the Four Golden Echoes.
Excellent. And then, of course, you moved away, didn't you, from the family, went down to Nashville to a Christian academy.
Well, before then, my mother and, you know, my father was an alcoholic.
Oh, dear.
And he was a gambler. And
oh, dear.
We were dirt poor.
Mm-hmm.
And we could never have anything. And my oldest brother had moved to Cleveland, Ohio.
Okay.
And had gotten married. And he told my mother, he said, you know, I'm going to send for you. And my dad was abusive when he got drunk. So he said, I'm going to send for you so you can get some peace, Mama, he said. And I'm going to send for you and the girls and my little baby brother. And you all come to Cleveland and live with us until, you know, my mother could get on welfare and get her own place. And he did. He sent for us, and we went to Cleveland. This is how we met Bishop Jewell.
Okay.
His wife was a member of a church called Church of the Living God. And they would come in. On Tuesday nights, they had a talent show. And they would bring in different people, not just kids, but anybody that had any kind of talent. And they had a band, a four-piece band, a bass player, a guitar player, a drummer, and a steel guitar.
Right.
The gospel steel, they called it. And they had music in that church. Like no music I had ever heard. I was so excited. My God, it was like music that nobody, I had ever heard music like that before in my life as a kid. At that time, I was about 11 or 12. And my goodness, I mean, we were just sitting in our seats. We could hardly be still. And they called us, my sister-in-law, Ethel, had whispered into Bishop Jewell's ear that these old girls could sing and they need to call us up. We came to get into the contest.
Right.
And so they called us up, and we got up and sung, and that was it. Bishop Jewell wanted us to go. She had a school in Nashville.
Yes.
She had a Christian school in Nashville, and she asked my mother if we could come to the school and that we wouldn't have to pay any tuition, and we could be like, there's a college in Nashville called Fisk University that has Fisk singers. They had singers that would go out and raise money for underprivileged kids that wanted to go to college and didn't have money to go.
Okay.
So they had a group that would go out and raise monies for underprivileged children. And that's what Bishop Jewell did with us. That's where it started. That we would, my mother said, no, they're too young to leave home. And we begged and we pleaded and we begged and we pleaded, please let us go, please let us go. She said, I'm not letting you go because you're too young to leave home. I'm not going to let y'all go with that lady. We don't know that lady.
Mm.
So about the time we were breaking her down, but when my father showed up, I don't know. He got on the Greyhound bus and came to Cleveland.
Right.
And when he did, my mother changed her mind. She said, I'm going to let y'all go with that lady. She said, because I know she can do more for you than I can. And she did.
Yeah.
And the rest is history. We got with the, we started rehearsing every day. We became a big gospel group in the 50s. And we were three little girls. We were like the Jackson Five with a band. We were the only gospel group with a band. And we were kids.
Wow.
All the quartet singers, like Sam Cooke had a group, and Lou Rawls had a group.
Yeah.
And the Staple Singers had a group, but they only had a guitar player. Pops was the guitar player.
Yeah. Yeah.
And nobody had a full-fledged band except them three little girls.
Wow.
That could out-sing everybody.
Beautiful, because you were on the
so
same.
So we were a phenomenon.
Yeah.
We were phenomenal. We were like something nobody had ever seen before in life. They wouldn't let us in churches because they said it was the devil's music.
Oh dear.
So we had to go to the auditoriums. We had to go to high school auditoriums and different other auditoriums. Only churches we could attend were Bishop Jewell's churches. She had about 30 of them.
Mm-hmm.
So we go from church to church, you know, and sing there. And we started making records, and we made 8 songs and with for Nashville Records.
Yeah.
And we were there. I was there till I was about 16, 17 years old. And then I left because things just weren't right. And, you know, they were cheating us out of our money. And everybody was making money but us. And we were getting to be teenagers, and we just knew that we were making a lot of money for these people.
Yeah.
And it wasn't all going to the school.
Yeah.
And they weren't paying us. And so we said, well, I'm going home. I'm just going to go home and hope for the best. And that's what we did.
Okay.
Went home. My sister got married to one of the teachers, one of our tutors, and I went home to my mother in my last year of high school. And that was it. And then I started a family and had 4 kids. And,
mm-hmm.
and I had another abusive husband. And, you know, my story goes on and on.
Oh,
and on
dear.
And on.
Bless you.
So, 1969, I met Clarence Carter.
Right.
And he introduced me to Rick Hall. And the rest
of course, Rick Hall of Muscle Shoals, wasn't he?
Yes, yes, he was with Muscle Shoals. And Etta James had just left him because she went to Atlantic Records, and he was looking for a female artist. And
your first release on the Fame label was called I'd Rather Be an Old Man's Sweetheart. What an entry.
Yeah.
And that was the beginning of a beautiful collaboration. How did you meet Clarence Carter? It was an amateur contest, wasn't it?
I was doing a little weekend thing with a local club. My brother took me to one of his friends' club one night and begged him to let me sing. And I only knew two songs, and that was Do Right Woman and Tell Mama. And I sung those songs, and the crowd went crazy. It only hold 150 people, but they wanted me back, and he finally hired me. And Clarence Carter had just come out with Slip Away.
Yeah.
And he was coming to town, and so the guy's name was O.J. We called him O.J.
Okay.
And 2728 Club in Birmingham. I don't even think it exists anymore. And I was his regular artist. And so he asked Clarence, could I open for him? Clarence said no. And he said, oh, if you work here at this club, she's going to open for you.
Right.
He said, well, I already have a girl on the road with me to open. I already have my review. He said, you're going to love this one. So he said, well, okay, if you insist. So he said, she got to come to rehearsal. So I came to rehearsal on that Thursday. We did Friday and Saturday together with Clarence. And I had to rehearse on the Thursday. And I asked him, I said, do you know I Do Right Woman? He said, yeah, I think we can work that one up. And then I said, then I want to do Tell Mama, too. I said, I'll do that one. I only know two songs.
Right.
He said, that's okay. I think I can deal with Tell Mama since I wrote it. And I'm like, you wrote Tell Mama? I said, you wrote it? He said, yeah, I wrote that song. I wrote it. I wrote the song. I wrote it and put it on one of my records called Tell Daddy. And Rick Hall wanted to do it on Etta James, and she said, Tell Mama. So anyway, we can do that one. So they knew it well, you know, of course they did. And he wanted to hire me.
Fantastic.
To come on the road with him. And he said, I want to introduce you to my producer. Mm-hmm. I know he will love you. And I mean, the story is long, so I have a book out called Young Hearts Run Free, so you can read all that.
Okay, yeah.
But he took me to Muscle Shoals. We met him in Muscle Shoals, and I auditioned for Rick. And Rick was just elated, and he called all of the guys, the Muscle Shoals, now we call them the Swampers.
Yeah.
Rhythm section to get up out of their beds. It was like 9 o'clock, or stop watching football or whatever they were doing and come to the studio immediately. We're going to cut a session tonight. And that's how I did. I did three songs that night.
Mm-hmm.
I did Old Man Sweetheart.
Yeah.
I'd Rather Been Old Man Sweetheart. I'd Rather Been Old Man that's Sweetheart.
And A Young Man's Fool.
For You and Never in Public.
Beautiful.
And then he made me sign a contract that night.
Wow.
And he was gonna shop it. We ended up going with Capitol Records for the first time, and that's how I got into the music industry.
Well, I'm not surprised he made you sign with the quality of those cuts.
For you. We'll be right back.
lovely record. One of the three tracks you recorded during your first session at Muscle Shoals. Prior to that, you recorded a track on Unity Records, didn't you? That's really popular mm-hmm. over here. Now I've got the upper hand. Tell me about that. How did you come to Unity? Because they're not related to Fame Records, are they?
No, that was just an independent label.
Yeah.
In Birmingham, Alabama. It was a tiny little label. They were trying to get off their feet. They never did. But they did do a song on me. They heard about me. And the owner of the record label was at one of my shows at the little club that I was doing.
Right.
And he invited me he said he wanted to cut a record on me. And I said, fine. I'm thinking, oh, wow, this is great. So I went down to the studio and cut that song. And it was another song, too, that he had me do. A Man Can't Be Judged. This is in the... check this out. This is in the 50s.
Right.
And we sung a duet called A Man Can't Be Judged by the Color of His Skin. And you can imagine how far that went.
Yeah. Yeah, at that time.
So, but we did Upper Hand. And one more song. I remember that song. But he put it on the radio for a short while and it got a little popular.
Mm. I'm not surprised. It became a Northern Soul classic. I'm only surprised Unity let you go to Fame.
I signed a contract with him before I did Rick. And I was under a 2-year contract with this Unity record label. And after I signed the contract with Rick, I got scared. I'm like, I said, Clarence, I'm already under contract.
Oh dear.
He said, what are you talking about? I said, I'm already under contract with this company in Birmingham. He said, what's the name of the company? I said, Unity Records. He said, don't let them know you with Rick Hall. He said, we're going to talk them. I'm going to buy the contract. So he went and I asked the guy, would he give me my contract back? He said, go and call him and find out if you can get the contract back. Since the record didn't do anything, you know, that he can't hold you up. He says, no, I'm not giving you your contract back. I'll sell it back to you. Because he knew I didn't have any money.
Yeah.
I said, well, what do you... See, you know I don't have any money. He said, well, you know, you stuck with me. I said, how much do you want for it? He said, I'll take $1,500. If you can get me $1,500, I'll give you back this contract. So I told Clarence, and he gave me $1,500, and I went and got my contract.
Wow. What was the look on his face?
Hmm?
What was
he didn't know where
face?
I got the money.
No,
he was like... Yeah, well, and then maybe it was like 9 months later, this song came out and sold like 750,000 copies, was he mad.
I bet. But talking about
you, was like, she's trying to be slick.
Yeah, but you touched earlier on you can't judge a man by the colour of his skin. I mean, this was 1967, the famous Detroit race riots, and there was a lot of tension. But at Muscle mm-hmm. Shoals must have been a wonderful oasis, because the Swampers were all white. Largely, the artists were black. It completely went against current thinking, didn't it? Contemporary thinking,
yeah, because the guy I sang it with was white.
Yeah.
I was a black woman, he was a white man.
It must have been wonderful. And just how it should
be. It was a great song. I thought it was a wonderful song.
Yeah, yeah.
We harmonized it together, and it didn't go anywhere. We tried to put it on the radio. I said, you got to be joking. Come on. You think we don't play this? You know, it was just before its time.
Yeah.
It was really, it was not time for it.
No.
And they weren't ready for that. But they did play Upper Hand.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, going back to Muscle Shoals and the Fame label, I mean, you cut some great tracks there. One of them, you covered Elvis's In the Ghetto. Let's play that next.
As the snow flies on a cold and gray Chicago morn, little baby child is born in the ghetto.
In the ghetto.
And his mama cries. 'Cause if there's one thing that she don't need, is another little hungry mouth to feed in the ghetto.
In the ghetto.
People, don't you understand? Child needs a head. You gotta be an angry young man someday. Take a look at you and me. Are we too blind to see? Or do we simply turn our heads and look the other way? Well, the world turns, and a hungry little boy with a runny nose plays in the street as the cold wind blows. And his hunger burns, so he starts to roam the street at night. He learns how to steal and he learns how to fight in the ghetto. And then one night in desperation, the young man breaks away. He buys a gun, steals a car, tries to run, but he don't get far. And his mama cries. As a crowd gathers round, an angry young man face down in the street with a gun in his hand. In the ghetto.
In the ghetto.
And as her young man dies, on a cold and gray Chicago morn, another little baby child is born. In the ghetto.
In the ghetto.
And his mama cried.
In the ghetto.
That's just great. It prompted him to actually send you a letter of congratulation, didn't it?
How yes, cool he did. During that time, I had just married Clarence. We weren't getting along well.
Oh, dear.
And I had a child by him.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just not, I just knew we weren't going to make it. And it was during a time in my life where there were a lot of upheaval things that just weren't going right. I was unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
I had my mind on packing up, leaving the house, buying a new home, because at that time I could afford a home by myself.
Yeah.
And I was living with him, and he was womanizing at the time, and I just wasn't going to have it.
No.
And so I'm trying to pack all the stuff and get all of my important papers together, and so I can file for divorce and move out of the house. And the letter was there. It was in the drawer. I never forget where it was. I put it. We had a desk. We had a beautiful home, but we had a desk in the kitchen.
Right.
And I had put the letter in the top drawer of the kitchen, in the little desk in the kitchen, to save it. I would look at it every so often.
Yeah.
And I saw his signature, you know. And I forgot to get it.
Right.
When I was moving out.
Oh, dear.
I just forgot it. It was there. And I don't know what Clarence ever did with it. Oh, I don't know. Because, you know, he's blind.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure they just, whoever got in the house just kind of folded it, just kind of balled it up and put it in the garbage.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure. But
yeah,
never mind.
They just kind of balled it up and put it in the garbage. They didn't think it was... They was cleaning out drawers, and they all just threw it away.
There
and I'm go. Like, oh, my God. But he was alive then, you know.
Yeah.
I thought maybe someday I'd run into him and get another one. But it never happened.
No. Another big milestone while you were at Fame was your cover of Stand By Your Man was your first ever gold record.
Yes, yes, Stand By Your Man. We came up with that. Rick, I came in the studio. We were recording an album. We were getting ready to do another session.
Yeah.
And my first session, I think it was the second session I was doing with him. And he was listening to Tammy Wynette.
Okay.
I went in the office and he was listening to Tammy Wynette. And I walked in and I sat down. He said, listen to this song. Listen to the song. Fit you. This will fit you. I said, yeah, it's a nice song, but Rick, I said, it's country. He said, oh, we're going to take the country out.
Mm.
I said, how are you going to do that? He said, well, we'll find a way. We'll find a way. So we went in the studio, and he played it on the big speakers. And he says, guys, we want to take the country out. Y'all got any ideas how to take the country out of this song? And so David, the bass player, he started sitting there. We were listening to it, and then he just started to come up with this line: doom, 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 doom. Rick said, "That's it. That's it." He said, "Guitar player, I want you to start riffing." He said, "Jimmy, start the riffing. Riff, just do your little riffs. You know, chinga, chinga, chinga." And then you know, the drummer, he got the beat.
Mm-hmm.
And before you know it, we worked the
you
song up
track.
to the Stand By Your Man you hear today.
Sometimes it's hard to be a woman. Giving all